Hello, fellow rebel capitalists. Hope you're well. Wanted to go over a summary, a quick summary of a book that I'm listening to right now to help illustrate why the Great Reset agenda, the World Economic Forum, the global elite, One World Government, IMF, UN, whatever you want to call it, why they and their agendas are doomed to fail. So let's just shoot over to Wikipedia page for this particular book, and I'll go through my ideas as quickly and as concisely as I possibly can. So this is the book I'm listening to currently because I'm really trying to get my head around what is happening with the World Economic Forum. How can they have their tentacles, if you will, in every single country on the planet Earth? How can they be influencing so many of these politicians and CEOs, the Davos types? How can they be influencing so many influential people, I guess, or so many powerful people? And where does this end? And is it possible that they pull this off? And if they do, what would be the economic impact, setting aside the freedom and liberty, the 1984 component of it? Because I think, at least for me, if I try to mentally tackle the entire thing, there's so many variables that it makes it hard to really comprehend. But if I'm able to compartmentalize it into, okay, economic impact, personal freedom, liberty impact, the Big Brother type of impact, and then, you know, what happens on future generations, and how are they trying to influence, or how are they trying to, not just influence, but how are they trying to manipulate people? What tactics are they using to achieve their objectives, and how do we break these down into simple terms? It's very complex, but I think it starts by understanding who they are at their core. And at their core, with the exceptions of the CEOs and whatnot, most of these people are just simply intellectuals. That's like Klaus Schwab. What has he done? What? Nothing. What business has he run? He's not an entrepreneur. Maybe he started the World Economic Forum, more power to him, but not really an entrepreneur. I don't know how many times Klaus has had to forego meals and put payroll on his credit card. I have, and many other entrepreneurs have. I don't know how many times Klaus Schwab has had to risk his entire life savings for an entrepreneurial pursuit, to pursue your own interest while at the same time creating jobs, creating products or services that society values more than the money in their pocket, and therefore improving society at large, improving the standard of living, creating economic growth and activity. You know, I don't think he's done that too many times. And likewise, for these people at the UN, at the IMF, they are intellectuals, as Thomas Sowell calls them or refers to them, they're idea workers. So let's go through this here and see if we can kind of connect some dots. So Thomas Sowell says, intellectuals are defined as idea workers that exercise profound influence on policymakers and public opinion. Sound familiar? And one other thing that I'm trying to do, and I would suggest maybe you guys try this out as well. I've noticed that the more condensed the content is that I'm absorbing, the less value it has. It doesn't really move the needle. It just makes me mad, or it just gets me emotionally engaged. So as an example, Twitter's an extreme here. You've only got, I don't know what, 140 characters. Maybe it's more now, but you've only got a small space. So you're digesting all this content in very little teeny weeny bits. And I think there's I think that makes you less smart, not more smart. And then you take that to the next step and you say, okay, well, maybe there's, watching a YouTube video. Okay, I think there's some value there for sure, because you've got to at least, 20 minutes, 30 minutes, maybe it's a long form podcast of 3 hours. I definitely think there's value there, but I think the ultimate is when you can actually sit down and read or listen to a book, right? That's like the opposite of Twitter. And I think that's where there's significant value, especially because, one problem that I have, and I'm sure most of you have this as well, is that there's with social media and with the internet, and you get all this information in real time. If you guys grew up when I did in the 1970s and 1980s and 1990s, you remember that when you, or how you'd get your news is you'd get the morning paper. And then, if you really wanted to dive deep into what's going on in the world, you'd just simply watch the news at, 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock, the news came on. And that was it. That was your source of news. Now you've just got this cell phone that you carry around with you, just shouting at you constantly with all this noise. And it's difficult to sift through all the propaganda, especially now, and try to find the truth and the ideas that you should really focus on to improve your life and truly understand what is going on in the world. And so I think for that reason, it's wise to go back and read and or listen to books from people who have the life experience. We tend to think, and I make this mistake all the time. We tend to think that what we're seeing right now in the world is unprecedented. And if you want to say, history doesn't repeat itself, it rhymes. I get it. I get it. But what we're seeing right now isn't entirely unprecedented. Maybe that's the best way to say it. This has been seen, that the intelligentsia, the World Economic Forum types, they have been there throughout history. And so why should I sit here and try to decipher what's going on all on my own when I can leverage the wisdom of someone like Thomas Sowell or Milton Friedman or Ludwig von Mises, if I'm saying that correctly, or Murray Rothbard or Hayek or any of these other people, that they did this their entire lives. Thomas Sowell, I believe, is in his 90s right now. So is there really something that's going on right now that he hasn't seen before in his life, or something very similar to it? I doubt it. And the great thing about Thomas Sowell is the guy's written like 40 books, or I don't know if it's that many, but at least 20 books, and all on topics that I think are very relevant to what we're seeing today. So if you can, I hate to go too far off on a tangent, guys, but I'm really trying to help you out here, and I'm trying to help myself out. I'm trying to help myself think through this. But one of the advantages, one of the tools I have in my toolkit that allows me to, I think, have kind of an edge when it comes to understanding macroeconomics and maybe assessing probabilities of something happening in the future, such as consumer price inflation, is because I've done so many of these darn videos, whiteboard videos, probably over 500 now. And prior to that, I just obsessed over macroeconomics since 2012. Most of you guys know my backstory, and that's when I retired and got in. That's really when I got hooked on macro and economics as a result of stumbling across Milton Friedman's Free to Choose, actually on YouTube, when I was in Singapore. That was that started the whole journey. But now, after doing all these interviews and all these whiteboard videos, I've got a pretty good idea of how the system works to a certain degree. Obviously, there's a lot that I don't know, but just as an example, like the dollar funding markets are how quote unquote money is created, repo, euro dollar. QE, Fed's balance sheet. So I get a lot of this stuff. And therefore, when I see something new in the news, like on CNBC, or you know, what Klaus is doing or what he's proposing from an economic standpoint, I can see it through the framework of all the research and the studying that I've done and all the people that I've talked to in the past. And it really gives me an edge. It's like having kind of a sixth sense. So my point is, what I'm trying to do now is understand and gain and leverage a lot of the wisdom from the Thomas Sowell's, the Milton Friedman's, the Hayek's, the Mises, and build that framework so I can look at the Great Reset agenda and have a big edge, because I can look at it through the framework of all the people, all these wise individuals who have seen things like this throughout history and written books on it. So I know that's a kind of a long-winded intro, but I think it's important. At least that's what I'm trying to do. And I don't know, maybe you guys can find some value in my overall process. But let's get into this book more specifically here. So we talked about how these intellectuals like the Klaus and the Davos types, UN, IMF, they're these idea workers. And a soul, I'm reading right here, says they have often resulted in disaster for societies where intellectuals have been allowed undue influence. Here's the first point where I take pause and try to think, wow, undue influence. And how much, or how, well, I guess that's the right way to say it. How much has their undue influence increased in the last decade as a result of social media, as a result of us trying to seek out these echo chambers? And as human beings, you know, we're always looking for confirmation bias. And what happens is the ideas become circular. And Thomas Sowell points this out in the book, where the idea workers don't have any other conflicting ideas that penetrate into their worldview. And the idea workers just talk amongst themselves. And there's nothing in the real world to refute their ideas. He used the example of Vince Lombardi, and as the opposite of an intellectual, that if he had ideas that he wanted to implement or he would argue were correct, well, there's a way to judge that very easily. Did the Green Bay Packers win or lose? You can judge that. But with the Klaus types, there's no way to judge whether or not their ideas are accurate, especially if we go into this world, what we're seeing right now on social media, where everything that conflicts with the World Economics view, Economic Forum's view, or the global elite, you know, the authoritarians, everything that conflicts with their view is labeled misinformation. So, and then it's banned or it's deleted, so other people cannot see it. So this exacerbates that circular motion of their ideas that never have the ability to be refuted. And they talk amongst themselves, and they just, you know, pat each other on the back and say, tell each other how right they are. And this just solidifies these ideas that never are allowed to be, they're never allowed to have any type of criticism whatsoever because of their control or influence over the public forum, let's say. And, you know, so there's times throughout history where they have had certain degrees of influence, these intellectuals. And I think now we're living through a time when they have I don't want to use the word unprecedented, but but they have a huge, huge, huge degree of undue influence over the politicians, the corporate figures, the CEOs, the media. I mean, Thomas Sowell references in his book, The Intellectuals in Society, about how the media really facilitated the objectives of the Hitler types and the Stalin types back in the middle of the 20th century. Well, let's just go through here, because what he was saying is that whenever you've had the Stalin types as an example, there's always been a significant amount of these intellectuals who they have been able to convince, or these intellectuals just come to the conclusion that the Stalin types are actually right. And there you get this circular type of logic. And, you know, it never gets disinfected by sunlight, if you will, until you actually go to war, or until that dictator takes over and you look back on it in retrospect and say, oh yeah, that was a bad idea. And he gives the example in the book of Bernard Shaw. And Bernard Shaw, you know, I guess very, very smart guy. And but he was well known for coming to the United States. I believe this was in the early mid 1930s, I believe, and saying that, I don't know why you guys like all this democracy stuff. It's nonsense. You guys just need a dictator. And dictators are far better because then they can make change and they can make all these decisions, and they don't have to worry about being reelected. They don't have to worry about votes and all these things. And therefore, they can just implement all these policies by decree. And, you know, if we just get the smart people, like the Klaus types, if we just give them a dictatorial power, then that's a far superior system. And he would argue this. And, you know, obviously, he would argue that quite literally, that he would argue why this is a good thing that Hitler has dictatorial power. Or Stalin, and obviously he was proven wildly wrong. But again, it was he an evil person? Probably not. It's just because he surrounded himself with other intellectuals that thought that they were a lot smarter than everyone else. They didn't understand why the free market, the collective intelligence of the free market, is far superior than the individual intelligence of any intellectual, regardless of their IQ. And one example that Sowell uses is, you know, what's more valuable, a diamond or a penny? Depends on how many pennies you got, right? And I just sent out a tweet kind of highlighting this idea that Thomas Sowell had, is if you've got 350 million pennies, and I use that number specifically because that's about the population of the United States, those pennies are going to be more valuable than pretty much any diamond on the planet. So what this means is the collective intelligence of the free market is always going to exceed the intelligence of a Klaus Schwab, a central planner, the Davos types, or even a group like the IMF. And this is why, if they're able to implement their Great Reset agenda, it is doomed to fail. One of the reasons. So why is that? I mean, this is something that he dives into extensively in the book that's fascinating. You know, why is it that the collective intelligence of a free market is far superior, even if the individual participants in the free market don't have the intellect, and I would argue they do, but even if they don't have the intellect of the enlightened few at the top, the reason is because the people at the top literally impossible for them to have all of the mundane knowledge that that society has, the free market. And often the mundane knowledge is what's most important. He used the example of, you know, just someone reading the book, knowing their local city. And I think he uses the example of New York, where he says, if I told you this street and this street, the cross streets there, you would know that block. And you would know whether or not it would be a good idea to start a business, let's say a drugstore or something like that, on that block. Why? Because you know that city. Maybe you grew up there or something. Now, this is a very mundane type of knowledge. And you know, does Klaus have that knowledge? No, absolutely not. Does the IMF have that knowledge? No, they don't. And it's impossible for them to have all that mundane knowledge. And if you ask them, they would just brush it aside as though that's completely irrelevant. Well, I've got too many important things to think about. I can't, you know, waste my time just thinking about, you know, what it's like at the cross streets of 24th and Maine. But what Sol points out is that if you're starting that business, that mundane knowledge that the elites just brush aside as though it's irrelevant is the difference between going bankrupt and making millions and millions and millions of dollars. Another example he used was the Titanic. He said, think about all the intellect of all the engineers that went into building the Titanic. I mean, you can picture this now with all the Klaus types and the Davos types, you know, patting themselves on the back for, you know, generating electricity through wind, or, you know, because they've done this study and that study. And I was listening to Klaus this morning go on about how if they just invested $300 billion in the green economy, he calls it, that would create 400 million jobs. What are you talking about? He just pulls stuff out of the air like, oh yeah, 400 million jobs. There you go. But the point is you had all these incredibly intelligent engineers building this, you know, seventh, eighth wonder of the world, whatever you want to call it. But they didn't have the mundane knowledge of where the icebergs were. And that's something they didn't care about. They didn't think about, because that doesn't take a high degree of intellect to determine where an iceberg is. It takes a high degree of intellect and understanding of concepts and ideas to figure out how you're going to engineer this giant boat called the Titanic, right? And this is why the collective intelligence, if you will, of society at large and the free market will always, always be superior, because they have all of this mundane knowledge that you have and I have just living our daily lives. I mean, how many of you on this live stream right now are you know, blue collar workers, construction workers, you know, plumbers, electricians, roofers, you know, guys and gals that I've dealt with a lot in over since 2012 and being in real estate so much. You know, you've got a lot of knowledge that is incredible, and nobody knows. Well, there might be a few, but nobody other than within your industry knows how to wire a house like you do. Nobody knows, you know, how to set up the plumbing in a house. So, by the way, it's very complex. Nobody knows how to do that outside of your industry like you do. So now does Klaus think he needs to know about plumbing? No, that is for
the common folk, I don't need to know about that.
But that's the mundane knowledge that if you put all the plumbers, the electricians, the roofers, the real estate agents, all the people in society that do what they do, the guy that runs the corner store, the person that runs the dry cleaner, the guy that drives the semi truck, you know, all of these things together is truly the knowledge that's important. And the global elite have zero of that, none. And again, this is why any type of central planning, and especially the Great Reset agenda, because that's what it's all about, that's one of the things it's all about, is completely doomed to fail. Hey guys, I want to remind you to get your tickets to Rebel Capitalist Live. This is the live conference I do twice per year with all of your favorite speakers from the Rebel Capitalist Show and experts in investing, commodities, real estate, freedom, and liberty. All of your favorite topics, all of your favorite speakers. The next Rebel Capitalist Live is going to be in Miami, and tickets increase in price as we get closer to the event. So go to RebelCapitalistLive.com right now to get your tickets to the next Rebel Capitalist Live. It's the conference you cannot afford to miss. It'll help you increase your financial freedom and, more importantly, your personal freedom. You'll get intel that you won't hear anywhere else. Past speakers have included icons in macroeconomics, investing, and personal freedom and liberty. People like Dr. Ron Paul, Robert Kiyosaki, Brent Johnson, Lynn Alden, Jeff Snyder, Richard Werner, Mark Moss, Lynette Zhang, and Robert Breedlove, just to name a few. So once again, go to Rebel Capitalist Live right now and get your tickets today. Now let's continue on with these summaries that I had highlighted, but I have to make do here. Okay, so working with ideas. An intellectual's work begins and ends with ideas, not the practical application of the ideas in the real world to solve problems. This is what we were talking about with Vince Lombardi. These purveyors of ideas may be at all points of the political and ideological spectrum. Although Sowell generally reserves his sharpest criticism for those on the left, certain common patterns of intellectuals, he argues, cut across specific political ideologies. Intellectuals, for example, show a marked preference for third parties working outside the established party. Okay, the preference sometimes outwardly. Yeah, for example, both National Socialism and Stalinism attempted to micromanage the lives of their citizens. Does that sound familiar? Both implemented sweeping propaganda campaigns to reframe reality. Are they talking about the 1900s? Or are they talking about 2022? To me, this sounds like 2022. I'll keep going. Again, both implemented sweeping propaganda campaigns to reframe reality, and both resulted in leadership by an elite outside group. Thus, apparently, despite the fact that both movements were notoriously anti-intellectual. So I think what he was referring to, and at least I've listened to this in the book, is that they used the intellectuals to really support their ideas. So as an example, we all know that Hitler was into eugenics. And so what he would do is he would look for intellectuals and quote unquote scientists to say that, hey, this isn't bad. This is good. Here's the science. You can't argue with that. I've got Dr. Fauci right here, and he's saying that this is the science. And this is what, Sowell talks about. And it's just this circular logic that just builds on itself. And if they never give it the light of day, the sun, expose it to the sunlight and other ideas because of censorship, then people and the media just believe that it's true because they don't get any counter arguments. So then with these intellectuals, there's always a lack of real accountability. And let's see here. An intellectual, for example, can condemn a military operation, excessive force, have no accountability in regards to the outcome of the operation. Yeah, or vice versa. A narrow specialized knowledge. So this is something that he says, okay, if you've got the plumber, I mean, this is as what's a great example here are these actors, right? Nicole Kidman or something like that, or Tom Cruise, are they extremely good actors? Yeah, they are. But do they know anything? Why would we assume that they know something about economics? I mean, come on. They don't even have, by definition, to be a good actor, you got to be a bit crazy. So why are we going to them asking their opinion on Hugo Chavez in the case of Sean Penn or something like that? I mean, this makes absolutely no sense. In fact, if you had to choose the people that are least worthy of giving us their ideas on X, Y, and Z, you'd start at a mental institution, and then the very next group would be actors and actresses. Because I've known a lot of actors and actresses in my day. I've dated a lot of actresses, and I can tell you that the better they are at acting, the more nuts, the more crazy they actually are. And this makes sense. If you think about what it takes to be a good actor, I mean, you've got to get into character. You've got to completely be someone else. I mean, how do you do that if you're dealing with a full deck? Usually that's very hard to do. Here he goes, and he talks about intellectual climate of distortion and misinformation. Sounds very familiar here. Sowell states that intellectuals often assume that their specialized knowledge qualifies them to guide others. Wow. And again, what we're dealing with today, guys, it might not be exactly what we've seen throughout history, but boy, oh boy, does it rhyme. And the players involved have the same mindset and the same motivation as they did in the 1930s, in the 1600s. I mean, it just, humans are hardwired the same way. So again, let me restate this because I think it's very powerful. Sowell states that intellectuals often assume their specialized knowledge gives them, qualifies them, to guide others, as do experts in any field of endeavor, practical or otherwise. Sowell argues that what is crucial is their influence on people who wield decision-making powers. This is why I think the World Economic Forum is one of the many reasons why they're so dangerous, because it is staggering the amount of influence they have on politicians and CEOs and people who have a lot of power. I mean, Bono, you know, Prince Charles, DiCaprio, all of these people, right? And I think as they grow and gain more influence, this is the danger, right? It is, and especially if through their influence they prevent people from hearing other ideas. This is probably my biggest concern, is that through the use of censorship in the media and on these social media platforms, that they will be able to not only influence these political leaders and the CEOs and the Bonos of the world, but they'll also be able to significantly influence the average Joe and Jane through the media, through social media. And unlike other times in history where people that had a dissenting view would be able to say, here's why Klaus's idea is really bad. And people like Thomas Sowell, like Milton Friedman, like Hayek, like Mises, they could say, and going back, by the way, to the mid 1930s, Mises wrote books back then, saying, hey, here's why these ideas are really, really bad in Germany, as an example. And then he would have a lot of people that would come back that say, oh no, you made this mistake. And then they'd go back and forth and back and forth. And they could do this through writings that were available to the public or through their books. This is what we have to have. We have to have this. If we want to avoid transitioning into this great reset agenda or whatever their worldview is for 2030, it all starts with free speech. It all starts with an open debate. It all starts with getting rid of censorship. That's the biggest evil here. Because Klaus can be as crazy as anyone throughout history, but if we don't have censorship, then the ideas get exposed to sunlight, and it'll open up people's eyes. Because again, we got to remember that the collective intelligence of society at large is far better than any of the central planners. So if we could just get all of these ideas out to everyone and through the lack of censorship, then I think it's safe to say that society is going to be able to determine which ideas are bad and which ideas are good. Here's another thing we see so much with the global elite right now, and especially the World Economic Forum. If you've read any of their blog posts or listened to Klaus speak, it's just right here exactly what Thomas Sowell is talking about. So he says verbal rhetoric versus evidence or logic. Wow. And that goes right back to what I was saying with the presentation that I heard Klaus do this morning on the Great Reset Agenda. He was kind of summarizing his book, COVID-19 and the Great Reset Agenda, where he was talking about all we'd have to do is just invest $300 billion into the green economy. Like, what does that even mean? Like what is the green economy? Like, I don't even know what that is. And then he says, he just flippantly says that if we just invested $300 billion in the green economy, we'd get 400 million jobs. Like, duh. So no evidence, no logic, no data, no facts, nothing. Just there you go. That's what, just believe me. So anyway, Thomas Sowell hits the nail on the head here. Sowell suggests that intellectuals rely heavily on what he calls verbal virtuosity, meaning clever phrasing, vague euphemisms. Oh my gosh. Could they be any more vague? I mean, wow. Witty quotes, deceptive labeling, name calling, and sneering asides to substitute for evidence, logic, and analysis. Boom. That's mic drop. Other tactics of verbal virtuosity include dismissing opposing ideas as simplistic, portraying those making opposing arguments as morally unworthy. See, guys, this is why we have to read people like Thomas Sowell. This is why we have to read people like Friedman and the Hayeks and the Mises, the people that I've been talking about. This is why we have to read history and Marx, for that matter, you know, and Keynes. Because, again, I even fall victim to this and thinking that what I am seeing right now, it's just the world has never seen anything like this at all, but they have. And Thomas Sowell has thought about this far more than I ever will. And so I think it's prudent for us to leverage this type of incredible, incredible wisdom because, and by the way, this book came out in 2010. So you can just see him talking exactly about what we are seeing today in 2022. So let me go over that again because that was just incredibly powerful. Other tactics of verbal virtuosity include dismissing opposing ideas as simplistic, or how about banning them altogether? Because that's misinformation. That's disinformation. Moving on, portraying those making opposing arguments as morally unworthy. We have to ban this person. Why? They're a racist. I mean, have you ever heard that before? We have to ban these truckers. Well, they're domestic terrorists. It's what the media goes to immediately. They attack the person's character immediately with no evidence whatsoever. It's just they don't address their ideas. They just attack the person. So they go on to say, invoking rights which have no legal basis, vague calls for change. How about we need a great reset agenda? Is that a vague call for change? That is like the epitome of a vague call for change. Reliance on abstract versus the concrete and constant filtering of reality. Just nails it. Goes on to talk about the ego involvement and personalization. So one thing that he discussed in the book that I found fascinating, because I always try to think, you know, okay, these global elite obviously think they're superior to everyone. I mean, they'll explicitly come out and say it sometimes. I was listening to a video from a gal like 2019 talking at the Club of Rome. And she was saying, you know, she was in the room with all these Davos types. And she was saying, obviously, the people in this room have achieved a higher level of consciousness. Those were her exact words. And it's just like, how arrogant could you possibly be? How obtuse, how ignorant at the same time could you possibly be, going back to them not knowing what they don't know when it comes to the mundane knowledge that Thomas Sowell points out in this book. But often I wonder, you know, how did that person get there? Like I try to look at my own ideas and say, well, you know, I could be right. I could be wrong. I try to poke holes in them. You try to you try to look at your own ideas with some sense of humility. So how is it that these, how do you get to that point where you believe that you have a monopoly on truth and therefore you should have all the power and control and you should micromanage every one of those dumb rubes in society? And Thomas Sowell points out that usually you got to think about it. When these people, and most of these people are not dumb. Like Klaus is not a dummy. He's a very smart guy. So you can imagine when Klaus was young, you know, when he, even in grade school, they probably started off by maybe he skipped a grade, or maybe they put him in all of these classes for super smart kids. And that happened throughout grade school. This happens throughout high school. You're taking all these, I think they were called AP classes. I was never in them. But as you guys, most of you know, I almost flunked out of high school. Maybe that's why I'm so humble about my own ideas. I don't know. And that's probably a big edge at the end of the day. But they get so much of this reinforcement from society when they're very, very young. That, and then when they go to college, where do they go? They go to Harvard. They go to one of these Ivy League schools with all this prestige. You know, they go to Oxford. Well, this is not for the rubes or the simpletons. No. This isn't for the plebs. This is just for the people who are smarter than everyone else. I mean, implicitly, that's, you know, kind of the deal when you're going to Harvard. And, you know, if they didn't have that implicit prestige, then I mean, why would you really want to go to Harvard in the first place? And so, and by the way, Klaus went to Harvard and he studied under Kissinger in the late 60s. And so you can imagine if you're young, you're always put into these upper division classes. You're always told by your teachers and your parents about how smart you are, and that you're better than everyone else, and that you're intellectually superior to all these people. This is why we have to put you in this higher level math class, or yada, yada, yada. And then you go to Harvard, and this is just for the intellectual elite, you know, or you go to Oxford, something like that. So when you get out of school, of course, you think you're smarter than everyone else. And people have been telling you this since the day you were born. And now let's assume you're 25 and then you never have a real job and you never start a business. You don't know what it's like to manage other people. And then you just start hanging out with all of these people that you think are as smart as you are that went to the same Ivy League school. And then you get just this circular logic. And then, of course, if you were, you know, brought up that way and now all of a sudden you're 50 years old, you would expect that person's worldview is the best way to run a society is through central planning. And I should be the central planner because people have been telling me and I've been proving that I'm smarter than everyone else my entire life. I mean, look at my SAT scores. I was valedictorian of blah, 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 blah. And so this is, Sowell highlights that in the book, but then, you know, they take another angle here. So this ego involvement and personalization, the presumption of wisdom and or virtue causes intellectuals to personalize situations where contending ideas are involved. Okay, so yeah, this is interesting. So this often results in a demonization of opponents. Again, why we see this playing out right in front of our own eyes. And personal fulfillment serving as a substitute for debate and evidence. Hashtag COVID. Sowell does not make it clear if intellectuals acquire these traits from politicians or the other way around. Well, there you go, guys. I cannot recommend Thomas Sowell enough. I cannot recommend this book enough. Again, that it was Intellectuals and Society. And the next one I'm going to read is the Visions, Conflicting Visions. I think I've actually listened to that many, many years ago. But I'm going to listen to it again, just to, again, try to understand the world around me better. And if I can hopefully understand the Davos types and the global elite and the politicians and kind of their angle and their motivations, hopefully that'll help me have an increased ability to connect the dots, put pieces of the puzzle together, and then, you know, figure out probabilities of future events occurring And then hopefully I'll do my best to share that with you guys. So it'll give you some value and maybe help you make some better decisions that will improve the lives of you, your wife, your husband, your kids, and your friends and family. Because that's at the end of the day, that's what it's all about here. All right, guys, enjoy the rest of your afternoon. As always, make sure that you're standing up for freedom, liberty, free market, capitalism. We'll see you in the next video.